This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from The Mid-Alt that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up.
Hi, everybody. I'm Annabelle, and I'm absolutely fine, but I had two Deliveroos yesterday.
What is that a sign of?
I always think a two siesta day is a sign of a very good day, but a two Deliveroo day is a sign of a very bad day.
Major decline.
Oh, God, I know. I just had a chicken wrap for lunch and I had a burger for dinner. I just couldn't get myself, you know, I couldn't get my head around cooking or shopping or anything. And I feel really polluted by it. But I've slipped a disc and I'm in quite a lot of pain. And the specialist obviously can't see me for 10 years. So I call my GP and I said, listen, I'm in a lot of pain and the specialist can't see me for all this time. What do I do? And they, I was very surprised, prescribed me an absolute cocktail of diclofenac, cocodamol, diazepam. I mean, you name it. And so I was thrilled. I even slightly think of myself as Keith Richards. I was going to say Kurt Cobain, but he didn't last very long.
Does that mean I'm Mick?
If you want.
I'm not sure I do. Anyway, sorry.
And I thought that I would be very rock and roll about all these pills. I thought I'd practically be sort of crushing them up and snorting them and really go to town with them. And honestly, after 12 hours, I had to stop. They make you feel... I mean, what state was I in on Monday?
Well, you were sort of like hungover and foggy, but not in a fun way, in a sort of queasy, reverse Wizard of Oz type way.
Yeah, not fun. So anyway, so I'm sucking up the pain. I've reverted back to double dropping paracetamol and Nurofen because I can't do those hardcore meds.
It's so interesting though, because you'd think, wow, brilliant opportunity to kind of, you know, float on the sort of Xanax cloud or whatever. No.
Yeah, I'm making lots of rehab jokes. Yeah, hilarious.
Exactly, like, oh, this is going to be me soon. No, in fact, it wasn't you at all.
No, so I'm just mainlining burgers.
There you go.
How are you?
Well, hi, I'm Emily. I'm absolutely fine. But actually, I have no idea how I am. When we were talking about the podcast earlier, Annabelle and I were like, so I'm absolutely fine, but... And I couldn't think of anything because there is someone in my life who is literally sucking all of the oxygen out of our day-to-day. And it means that there is no room for feelings. There is no room for energy. There's no room for anything. It's like a sort of void. Anyway, it's extremely stressful.
Yeah.
So I probably am absolutely fine, but I'm extremely stressed, but still. And I'm sure lots of people will understand what it's like when the balance, the family balance is off. It's extremely hard work.
Well, it's inescapable.
Yeah.
You can't ever... You really pretend that it's not happening.
No, exactly. Anyway, our next guest regularly messages us asking how's morale, which she decided was a less intrusive way of asking people how they are. Such thoughtfulness is typical of writer Daisy Buchanan, who is no stranger to this podcast, because now and again, we ask her to come on and tell us what we need to be reading. She hosts the literary You're Booked podcast and has just written another great novel, Limelight, which is about women and bodies and bodies and women and shame and sex and bodies and how we take up space in the world. We are thrilled, as always, to have her here. So Daisy, how's morale?
Hello, morale is good. Emily and Annabelle, I'm really happy to be here and I'm absolutely fine, only I have done something that I thought was terrifically organised and terrifically adult and it really has bitten me in the bottom. I thought I would get ahead of the game and take some coats and take some wintry things to the dry cleaners so they'd be all clean and put away and ready to go when I need them again.
God, that's grown up.
Well, I am now having... a second extreme cost of living crisis of my own, the price of dry cleaning. Holy Christmas, Batman. And it's not even as though I've got exciting new clothes to wear. I wish I'd done the irresponsible thing and blown my dry cleaning budget on a lovely summer dress. So no good deed goes unpunished.
How much does it cost to dry clean a coat? I ask because I'm too tight to dry clean my coats, basically. It used to be 12 quid, but I bet it's more now.
100% not 12 quid.
Yeah. I mean, that's in the Middle Ages.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the Middle 80s, but the Middle Ages is virtually the same thing.
It was 5
So
shillings.
The sun comes out and it heats up at some point and bodies come out. And I think maybe the longer days and the warmer weather can highlight some of the weirdness that we have around our bodies. I know we're all supposed to be re-educated and be 100% fine with the cards that we've been dealt, but I'm not sure, Daisy, that that's where we are yet. Are you?
I am not at all. And I wanted to write this novel, Limelight. My amazing editor, Darcy, described my writing as the work of someone who dances in the grey areas. And that's what this is, that we live in this world where on the one hand we're told to be really positive. I see adverts for shampoo where it's like, look at these women, all different shapes and ages and sizes, and they are all gorgeous and smooth, and it's a different kind of perfection. But then we've got this messy, wobbly, gritty weirdness, and I feel like I'm failing as a hot person, I'm failing as a feminist. It's just, there are just more and more frontiers to fall down upon. And so I wanted to write about this woman, Frankie, who wants to look good. She's a big, tall girl, and in real life, she is overlooked and dismissed. She feels very self-conscious, and she's grown up in the shadow of a very, very beautiful big sister, Bean. Bean is petite. Frankie thinks Bean is perfect, although it becomes clear that Bean never really thinks about herself in those terms. But Frankie is able to go online and pose and filter herself and manipulate herself in such a way that to her very small community of admirers, there's sort of less than 50 guys, she's an anonymous hot girl on the internet, and these men know nothing of Frankie, and Frankie likes it that way, that she's got, she can compartmentalise. And of course it all goes horribly wrong where Bean gets ill, their meddling mother Alison interferes in a hilarious and disastrous way. And from Frankie having this tiny space where she can feel confident and just outsource her need for a bit of positive attention and validation, that gets blown up. She's shamed. It's confusing that Frankie is using her body and presenting herself in the way that I think lots of women have been told to. And that's the message we all get, I think, isn't it? It's like, be sexy. Mm. How dare you be sexy?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, you know, talking about just photos. I'm just thinking about when I look at a picture of myself, and I'm really weird about pictures of myself. Am I thinking that's a nice picture of me? Or am I thinking that's a picture of the way that I would like to look, and that somehow the light and the angles and the filter have conspired to make me acceptable to myself in that one particular image, unlike the other ones that I've deleted? You know, I think maybe we all do that. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm not on OnlyFans, but we all do that to a certain extent. Is that just me looking happy? I don't want me looking happy. I want me looking closer to the way I think I should look.
It is such a shock, I think, when we can have that. You know, we can really make an avatar. There's such a blurring between that. Gosh, I always get confused. I think it's Second Life, that video game that's like The Sims, but a bit more, you know, people. I never played it, but I know it had a real community of people really building themselves and kind of falling into the game. And I suppose life caught up with that, that we can do so much digital rearranging of our faces. And we've got more access to real life facial arranging than ever. And, you know, I think of that all the time. I have not had any Botox yet. I'm pretty sure it's in the post, but I go back and forth and I'm like, do I need to, is that my 40th birthday treat? Are there other things I can do? And should I do it now? Should I, you know, do that? Because I've heard the awful phrase like preemptive Botox. Then who am I doing it for? Why do I want to look the way I want to look? Is that real? Is anything real? Is it because I look at myself the way we have all been trained to look at women, which...
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online.
Okay, serious question.
How many times have you been out recently? Actually, you know, scratch that. How many times have you woken up the day you were supposed to go out and felt flooded with dread? How long have you spent praying that the other person will cancel so you don't have to?
And yet, just as we're avoiding people, so many of us feel really lonely and more tired than ever, particularly now the days are getting a bit longer and you think, how am I going to have the energy to go out into the world?
Our social batteries are very flat at the moment, and that can make us feel isolated, which can lead to trouble. And in my experience, therapy has helped me track my best energy sources and helped me better identify what leaves me feeling depleted.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try?
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist and switch anytime for no additional charge.
With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/midult. That's betterhelp.com/midult.
BetterHelp, because sometimes the best thing to do is acknowledge that we are not, in fact, absolutely fine.
Which is sexist and quite misogynistic and reductive and horrible. You know, I was a teenager around about sort of 2000, 2001-ish, and things I remember are Britney, Girls of the Playboy Mansion, just this time where the beauty spectrum to me was never narrower. It's like be really, really, really skinny with boobs, white, blonde, you know, that's it. There was no, the most body diversity I saw as an anxious teen who was really, really struggling with eating disorders and her own body image. Kate Winslet. Kate Winslet was a diverse body that I could, you know, comfort myself with thinking, oh, well, she's a size 14. Maybe I don't need to go and hide in a hole.
She was probably not even a size 14.
No.
And people were vile, to her. Vile about her. She's really interesting about it now. She was a young girl. Horrific.
Yeah. And I think that's the sort of the really interesting kind of nugget. Well, there's so many good nuggets in your book, obviously, because reading you is always such a pleasure. But is that who are we doing it for? We are so disconnected. And I think that obviously social media and this sort of added lens, this added screen makes such a difference. But when we take a picture of ourselves, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to show something that is a moment, or are we trying to say, look how successful my life is? Or are we trying to say, you know, or do we actually genuinely post? And I think it's probably true, and I'm sure I do it, is that you post pictures that you go, look how thin I look in this. You only like this because you look thin in it or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, okay, but who are we doing it for? Who?
But also we have to forgive ourselves for not being fine.
Also,
you know, because there's this idea that now, okay, we've reclaimed the narrative, body positivity or body neutrality, fuck the patriarchy, we are fine. Most of us are not fucking fine. But then that's just another stick to beat ourselves with. We have to forgive ourselves for feeling complicated about it. I've lost quite a lot of weight recently and I feel very strange about it because every time someone says, you know, you look great, I sort of think, well, how dare you congratulate me for making myself smaller in the world? And was I that meaningless before? And I feel quite nice about zipping up this particular dress. And then, but why does that, that should not make me happy. So even when you get yourself to the point where you're supposedly feeling fine, you're still not feeling fine. But that's all right, I think. It has to be all right.
I think that's such a good point, that it's so complicated when our bodies change. And we can maybe feel okay or good for half an hour or 10 minutes and then something else comes along. And I think certainly the older I get, the more I am aware of everything about, I suppose, being in my body and not thinking, oh, I've got to kind of starve it and spray tan it and put it in this dress. And, you know, noticing for some things about, you know, like periods, knowing, you know, I've got sort of perimenopause isn't so far away. All this stuff about women's health that's been completely ignored. And there are obviously some really, really brilliant people talking about this on social media in so many ways that we can educate ourselves and learn. But I think this is so underserved in terms of, you know, global health, because, you know, people have just wanted us to kind of, you know, preoccupy ourselves with being thin and hot and quiet. And maybe, you know, this is the next stage of the reckoning, is realizing, you know, what it's like to, because I think, you know, weight loss is, Annabelle, a similar thing happened to me where, you know, my body changed quite dramatically. And things I noticed that were good, like there's a particular, where I live,
There's a brilliant little theatre called the Tom Thumb Theatre in Margate, which is fabulous. And it's got my favourite bar in the whole of Margate as well. And I remember that before I lost weight, it felt like such a long way to walk to the Tom Thumb. It was the other end of town. And I really felt puffed out by that walk. And then I was like, oh, that walk is fine now. And that felt really nice. But, oh, well, that's made life a bit easier. It doesn't come up all the time, but it comes up often enough.
But that could have been a byproduct of the fitness that delivered the thinness rather than the thinness, right? Because you were working out.
Absolutely. It's impossible to know. And, oh, my God, clothes are so complicated because I've always had, I mean, who among us hasn't? I've been reading a lot lately about shopping addiction. And I think we all laugh when we say, oh, you know, shopping addiction, that's not a real thing. But buying lots of clothes for the body I thought I had, or the body I'd like to have, you know, buying things now. And because there are other things about the way my body was that I really, really miss. And, you know, trying on old things and expecting to, you know, feel really like, oh, I feel so thin and great. But it's like, no, I just look sort of deflated.
Exactly what I'm finding. And they just look weird. The clothes look weird. My body looks weird. I don't have the money or the inclination to do the big shop up that I sort of need to do to look like a fully functioning member of society at the moment. So I bought one belt. And everything is just, I just belt it. That's my solution now. One belt that we'll have to do. But, you know, that's the thing is you think that everything will be easier, but this world is not designed for us to have an easy relationship with our body, whatever shape or size it is.
So what's the answer? We don't know.
We don't know. But your book is very good on shame.
Which I think is something that we can all relate to. And I think that's it, that I will always, always be drawn to write about women who don't quite know what they want and they're ashamed to even begin to start to wonder and start to look. My first novel, Insatiable, was very, very sexually explicit and it's about desire and it's about being so sort of lost and confused and relying on other people to kind of take the lead and tell you what you want. And you think, oh, great. This looks good.
That was my sex life for most of my 20s. We're just relying on other people to tell me what I was supposed to want. Wouldn't you agree?
Totally true. And actually, I don't want to give away anything from Limelight, but it's also, there are some quite sexually explicit scenes in it, but the relationship with sex is completely different. She actually doesn't have sex with anyone but herself, basically, essentially. But if you...
So it's a reclaiming.
Exactly. But the provocation, the turn on is in slightly difficult situations.
And that's something that I think is really complicated, that I've never had a conversation with anyone about out loud. So this is going to be interesting, about how we in sex, you know, we want to lose ourselves and be with the person or people or with ourselves. And how much of that, you know, I think for me, because I grew up with lots of, you know, very Catholic shame about sex and shame about my body, because I was bullied quite violently. I was called fat and I had a lot of shame about the way I looked, and I just wanted so badly to be desirable. And I had this idea that there was a kind of an objective way to be desirable, and that wasn't me, and that could never be me, and I wasn't it. And it took me a long, long, long time to think, well, no, it's always in the eye of the beholder. And I know that sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but I think there's so much that we all probably still struggle at times with our sexual confidence. You know, and I've had that even, you know, with my husband, who's never ever sort of said this to me or done anything to make me feel this way, that there's sometimes on a bad day in the back of my mind, like, well, I don't understand how you could want this. Why don't you wish that you could have a sort of, you know, I don't know, Britney circa 2004, whatever, like, don't you want someone thinner and blonder and firmer than, and you know, especially again with, you know, being aware of like things that I took for granted about my body in terms of like, oh, you know, my skin was sort of smoother and fuller and firmer. And, oh, well, you know, as soon as I sort of, I feel like I've made peace with one bit of me, then it sort of starts getting older or falling off. But Frankie in the book is, I suppose, this is where my biology falls down. Is it, am I thinking of mitosis or meiosis, the sort of the cells that reproduce themselves, that she wants to be almost sexually self-sufficient. And there's one moment, a weird sort of disembodied encounter where she's really having sex with herself in kind of the creepiest way that she's just performing for herself, and she needs there to be an element of voyeurism that comes from outside, but that's not from her. And just, I think it's a way that we lose ourselves as well. Like when we're being sexual, I think we want to forget all of the increasingly exhausting and stressful demands of our lives, and that we are, you know, full women. That's another thing that you get from the shampoo adverts about loving yourself and self-acceptance, like find someone to accept the full woman that you are in every messy, flawed part of life. No, I don't want that. I want to be able to just be Barbie for 5 minutes and have an orgasm and then compartmentalize that and run away from it, which is, I think, many therapists would say, not healthy.
But again, it's the same thing, isn't it? We're so educated to believe that we have to be chosen, we have to be wanted, we have to be not, you know, not I choose this, I want this. And it's the distortion for all of us.
Well, sexy rather than sexual.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's hard, it takes a long time, I think, for women to work out what they are allowed to want and what they really do want.
Yeah.
And I hope what comes across is that part of what Frankie goes through in terms of understanding where she's at, that, you know, there are absolutely people who can be in the world that she's in terms of sort of sharing herself in that way, who are, and if you're really, really genuinely very comfortable with yourself, if you've got enough self-esteem in the bank that you are not needing that response to shore it up, then, you know, it's great to celebrate your body and, you know, put that out there. And if you get nothing but positive things from it, and equally, I really hate when people say her journey, but her journey is that she does end up finding a way, or hoping to find a way, to help a lot of women to celebrate her bodies. And the tagline for Limelight is, are you paying attention? At Frankie, a lot of her shame comes from the fact that she wants attention and she hates herself for wanting attention, and she never feels like she has enough of it. And she doesn't know whether to sort of to be out or to hide.
It is extremely worth reading. So everybody go out and get it. Now, what else?
Yes, once you've finished reading Limelight, what else should we be reading this summer?
Oh, there are some great books this summer. There's one that just came out. And a full disclosure, she is my good pal, but Lucy Vine's brilliant new book, Seven Exes. It's great, great fun. The premise is that Esther reads an article in a magazine, and it's to do with like the seven types of person that we all date. And Esther does some maths and realises, like, oh, well, you know, the love of my life has slipped through my fingers, and it's someone I've been with in the past. Who is it? And she goes on a quest to find them. And it's a classic premise, but Lucy is so good at writing rom-coms with real depth, and it's a really compulsive, propulsive read, and she's very, 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 very funny. But then you do come away, I mean, I think it's what because we, lots of those emotional relationships are, you know, I think, again, we find it, we have some shame, but we don't forgive ourselves. And she, through Esther, sort of guides us through that experience of making peace with our past and who we are. And it's just, you know, there are lots of really good gags, but it's also, I suppose, ultimately about, you know, anything that shakes that idea of the one, that, you know, you've got to be with yourself and get on with yourself. And, you know, any positive romantic experiences are a bonus. But there is especially one story about a really toxic relationship that Esther has never really got over, and she's able to re-examine it and come through that. I think she writes really good, beautiful, funny sentences. And it's got, if you love Emily Henry, you'll love it. But it's also got that touch of kind of grit and a very sort of, I think it's something that feels quite British, that sort of the rhythm of it and her gags. That's what I loved so much. But then the other books that I really loved are great, I think, if you want to go away from the UK and try something else altogether. This is a debut, and I think it's out in July, but I definitely recommend pre-ordering it. It's a writer called Hema Sukumar. It's her first book, Miami Disturbances at Grand Life Apartments. And it's got the best name of any book this year, I think.
It's a brilliant name. They had me at Minor Disturbances.
I know, when someone says to me, how are you? I'm going to say, well, you know, Minor Disturbances.
So good. I love it. Brilliant.
It's like when someone says, what's wrong? And you just answer, the circumstances.
Now we can say, minor disturbances.
Yes,
Thank you.
Minor Disturbances at Grand Life Apartments. It is all about people who are living in this beautiful old apartment block. They're in Chennai in India. Kamala is the main character, I think. She's the dentist who's on the brink of retiring. She's got a very complicated relationship with her daughter, who's away studying in Oxford. And her daughter's got something to tell her, and she's very, very nervous about it. There's also Revathi, who is in her early 30s. She is sort of struggling with kind of her ambition and her family's expectations of her. And in a way that she's sort of, I suppose, the almost a mirroring of what's going on with Kamala. And that's a sort of that. So it's a way for them to kind of explore their tricky mother-daughter relationship without being mother or daughter. And Jason, who's a British chef who's had his heart broken and wants to get far away from his ex and his relationship. And then there is something very dodgy going on in terms of the future of where they all live, and they've got to come together and save it. But it's just, it's so warm. It's so evocative. It's one of those books that really does take you away. And it's very, the humour of it is very gentle, but it's gorgeous. It's really, really beautifully observed. And you know a book's good when you keep thinking of the characters and thinking of things you'd like to tell them, and you're worried, yes, about how they're doing. You have to remind yourself that it is fiction. Another book set far away. It's really pacey and really fun. And it's a writer who I think is hugely successful. And she's I think Reese Witherspoon's a big fan, but this is the first one of hers that I've read. This is Now You See Us by Ballycower Jaswal. And it's got a bit of the Crazy Rich Asians vibe.
Ooh,
and
love.
It's set in Singapore, and it's about these three women who are all, I suppose, housekeepers or domestic servants, and they all band together. And one of them is really confused because her new employer treats her like weirdly well, and she's been, you know, worked in these jobs for a long time and doesn't understand what's going on. It's another one who's got her first job working for a woman who's the opposite, is just completely awful and really exploitative and mean. And again, it's about these women coming together. There's a creepy sort of subplot, I suppose, where the awful employer is very, very kind of a right-wing Christian who is trying to take down the national, sort of the Singapore equivalent of Planned Parenthood. But it's really funny, really pacey. It gets a story about different women and how they're sort of their intergenerational friendship, you know, it gives them different perspectives on what they're all going through. But yeah, I think that if you're furious about what's going on in the world and the way things are, this will sort of ignite that fury. And it's really satisfying and really fun, and it gives you the payoff you want. But also it feels really smart and thoughtful. It feels like a book that's kind of, it's about the world now, but it's written in a way that won't leave you weeping and thinking that you just want to hide away and never read again.
Because you don't want something that ignites the outrage. It's quite fun to have your outrage ignited, but then just leaves you stranded on an island of outrage where you're just flailing around furious and sort of, you know, breathless and frustrated.
But this, it's very human. It makes you feel as though there are solutions because the characters are smart enough to figure them out. But it's also...
because they're women.
Because they're women. It's a smart book, but it is a fun book. And on that theme, another disclosure, this is a friend of mine, but I want to recommend Pre-Loved by Lauren Bravo, which is brilliantly, brilliantly, brilliantly funny. It's about the fabulously named Gwen Grundle, who is... in her late 30s, and at that drifting point that I think lots of people will recognise, where she sort of looks up, she is redundant and single, and she sees her friends who've all, I suppose, made minor sacrifices, and their lives look much sturdier from the outside. And Gwen doesn't really understand why they've made those choices and why they want that, but she's also aware that she is drifting. So she goes to work in a charity shop. She starts volunteering because she feels guilty and weird, and she's desperate to do something useful. And it is very, very funny. It's also about, I suppose, our, you know, different kinds of guilt, which feels very now. I think we all feel guilty and weird, and we're all trying to be useful. And it's about how the sort of the attempts to resolve that work and don't work, and the flaws of that as a plan to try and, you know, absolve ourselves of sort of what we think we've done and how it works. And also about how it's, I think, one of the best books I've read about grief it feels very real. Sometimes when there's a sort of that's at its heart, it's quite volubly sad. And this is about numbness and estrangement. Like, I love the fact that Gwen's got a really, her relationship with her parents is sort of stuck. And there's a detail at the beginning where sort of they're in a sort of standoff where I think she's not spoken to them for 7 weeks and she caves and calls them. And she says she's been waiting for them to do it. And she said that, you know, after last time, I want to be the one they think of and the one they call. And how she just feels like she's been sort of sidelined by everyone in her life. But she's not self-pitying. She's very pragmatic. But also the story is made up of all the people who work in the shop and people who come into the shop. There's a great gag about how the sort of slightly sanctimonious, self-righteous manager of the charity shop, who's got lots of stores, whether you want them or not, people have christened him St. Michael based on the stock that comes in. So that's one that I really, really loved.
And I love that. Lots of stories, whether you want them or not. You're going to get them. Yes, I love it. And pre-loved, because we all feel a bit pre-loved sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, and I think this is, it's also interesting in terms of that, what you were saying about the guilt that we're all carrying around. Like, are we doing it right? You know,
Are we doing enough?
Are we exactly? Are we the right kind of woman? Like, are we? Do we care enough about the way that we look, or too much about the way we look? Do we care too much about our place in the world, or not enough about our place?
Should we be doing more for the world, which is obviously in a pile of state?
Exactly, but we're so tired we can barely walk up the stairs.
So how can we make a difference?
All of that stuff. There's always sort of carrying around this sort of, but at the same time, it all feels incredibly self-indulgent because it's like, well, you know.
Clearly, you've got too much time on your hands.
Exactly. If you've got time to worry about this fucking shit, then you're a lazy bitch. Yeah, basically, exactly. Just like, and I think we're all kind of torn about a million ways. No wonder we look and feel pre-loved.
Yes, we're all just exhausted and doing our best. I mean, the knots that we get into, and I think that's something that I'm really interested in as a, you know, because we're in terms of my relationship with my body and when that changed, one way that I sort of figured that out was, and the shopping thing, buying lots of secondhand clothes, that felt like a really low stakes way to figure out how I was going to start presenting myself to the world. It was a way to experiment, I guess. And it and I was
a sustainable, ethical way to experiment.
but I was probably still, buying clothes I didn't need. But it just slowed things down. It just sort of took the edge off.
Yeah.
But I think that's a great way, you know, for anyone who is thinking about how they want to be in their body and how we can kind of, you know, because I think we've all got a love-hate relationship with clothes, haven't we? Because they're fun. We think they're going to be joyous. We think we're going to, I think we all think we're going to find that one thing and be like, oh my God, this is it. This
Emily
is who I am.
Emily certainly believes that. Emily believes that the right pair of shoes will change her life, which is, as a result, she buys very strange shoes. But I mean, you really do have faith in clothes to transform you, don't you?
I really do. And we talked about this the other day, and I really think today this is going to be the perfect thing to put out into the world, and therefore everything will fall into place.
Yeah, this is who I'll be.
Yeah, exactly. And spoiler alert, does not happen, and Annabelle is generally cross about my shoes. So, you know, it's
But you do enjoy clothes in quite a straightforward way. I think it might be because you have quite a straightforward relationship with your body, actually.
Maybe,
so you can put on a dress and it is just a dress.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, it is not just a dress.
No, and I don't. Yeah, I think that is, you know, I'm quite lucky that way.
Yeah.
I think that it's not, it doesn't become about something else.
Yeah.
You know, or how I feel about those things. It's just like, but
can you imagine, Daisy?
It's like reverse Marguerite. This is just an outfit.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an amazing, I think it's a line in How to Be a Woman, but I've mentioned Catlin Moran before in this podcast, but when a woman says, I have nothing to wear, what she means is, there is nothing here in my wardrobe for the woman that I'm supposed to be today.
Yeah.
And I think like, well, I don't even know what woman I'm supposed to be today, really.
Yes, it's deeply confusing.
I find myself, when I look online, the clothes I'm drawn to buying for myself are divorcing a billionaire because I'm implicated in a sex scandal. That's not come up once.
Yet.
Not yet.
We live in hope.
I know, it's true. When I browse online for clothes, which I do shamefully often, I'm never not on everything from sort of, you know, Zara to Matches and back again. You know, one day I'm shopping for, I'm not just doing sort of well-rounded sort of, oh, you know, what might be nice out there. One day I'm shopping for my life on a super yacht, as you say. The next day I'm shopping for my life as a sort of land girl. The next day I'm, you know, I'm a gallerist. I mean, it's very, very weird. I think the mindset that one's just, you know, you almost put on VR goggles before you start to look at what's out there. It's not a neutral experience shopping, is it?
And then your podcast on dresses, which was brilliant. I loved it. And I
Isabel Spearman, so clever.
I love Isabel Spearman. She's fantastic. I still got a real bee in my bonnet about the perfect denim dress. And I saw the Align one on Vinted. Oh, and that was it. And then I had a crisis because I was looking at Sarah Pascoe posted on Instagram about wearing, I think she's wearing a Bathsheba blouse, and she was saying that she feels conflicted because, and this I thought was so interesting, people ask her when she's on TV, like, where did she get lovely clothes? She wants to buy clothes where she knows who's making them and she knows they've been produced well and fairly. The flip side of that is those clothes are expensive, and they're much more expensive than going to Zara. And she's aware that lots of the people asking, it's not really on to say, oh, just go here, it's 300 quid or whatever. And then you end up in a hot, and also by the time anything's ever like transmitted, you're like, well, you know, I got this 6 months ago, a year ago, they don't have it anymore. And you just end up in this circle of doom with it. And you feel guilty for looking nice in something and wanting to say, here's a picture of me looking nice, which brings us back to what we do when we have a picture of ourselves and what we're trying to share with that information.
What we're trying to achieve with it. Absolutely. Well, Daisy, as always, it's been a ride.
Yeah, wonderful.
And we can't recommend Limelight enough, really.
Yeah, exactly.
And all you and your podcast and everything about you. And we love you. Thank you so much for coming to see us again. And we will see you very soon. And that is not a threat, it's a promise.
Oh, I hope so. Thank you very much. And if it's all right to say this, Limelight, buy your books wherever. I'm just thrilled and delighted and honoured and stunned that anyone wants to buy me or read me. But if you buy it from an independent bookshop, there are some signed copies. If they've not got signed copies, I will do you a signed and dedicated book plate. If you ask at your local and get them to order it in, that'd be wonderful. And there are also Limelight badges. You can get some groovy little badges. There's one that says Attention Seeker that I'm very fond of. And I think another one that will say Naked on the Internet.
I want that one. In fact, I want a t-shirt that says Naked on the Internet. I'm emphatically not naked on the internet, but never say never.
I want a t-shirt saying I'm older than Google.
Yeah.
that can be arranged.
Independent bookshops, by hook or by crook, get your hands on the book. Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh, nice.
And on that note, don't think I can do better than that. I think it's time to go.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks so much, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Annabel Rivkin and Emily McMeekin of The Midult. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review, and subscribe.